Welcome in, everybody, to the MTOM Studio Podcast Room here at the luscious area of Iowa PBS. Luscious, when I say we don't have any green yet, it's been kind of dry, and that's a topic that we're going to cover today on the podcast. But let's talk about the room here. You can see that things are a little bit under operation. We're building some changes, some video changes that you'll see for those that watch on YouTube. Or if you're just listening, hopefully the audio quality is still the same. But this week we're going to go to Kansas, talk to Cameron Pierce. He is a multi-generational farmer in western Kansas near Hutchison. And we're going to talk about if he could plant any crop, soybeans, sunflowers, corn, wheat, cotton. Which one would he plant and what are the reasons? Might surprise you. It's not all weather related. It's not all market related either. We'll get into that discussion. We're also going to talk heavily about sunflowers. And Cameron has had visitors from Ukraine. He's been to Ukraine recently. Talk about the disruption in the sunflower pipeline, how they have both been. We know that they're used for oil. They're also used for seed in birds. And maybe if you're at the ballpark and you need something to do instead of yelling at the umpires. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. Love to have your story tips, ideas, or topics that, you know, I get it. Let's just move on. We'll not cover that one again. Love hearing from you. Also like it if you would share, like, subscribe, tell a friend, follow, whatever it is you want to do so you don't miss a new episode of this podcast, which comes out each and every Tuesday from the Market to Market TV show. So let's dig in with Cameron. Let's talk about why he's planting what he's planting this year. And maybe we're also going to start with sports because that's what I do. Enjoy. All right, Cameron, the K-State Wildcats carries a deep love in your family, is my understanding. So football or basketball, which one wins out for you?
To be honest, I like them both. There's nothing better than sitting in the combine on a fall Saturday and listen to a K-State whoop up on whichever other Big 12 team they happen to be playing at that particular time. I very seldom do I get to go to a football game just because the fall harvest is I'm usually on the combine or doing something in the field on those fall Saturdays. But I do like basketball probably a little bit better than football because it's a little bit more of a fast paced game. But
do you find it difficult to tell people who are younger than you and I to say, I remember when we were no good, and you have to remind them if you only have a 7-win season in football that's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I was actually at the North Texas game back when I was at K-State when they first broke the longest losing streak in the nation, and I wasn't really there just because I wanted to be there. I had to work the concession stand for the Glee Club. So, I mean, I just kind of lucked out the fact that we were all crowded up against the fence watching him score that last touchdown and win the game. So it was pretty exciting. It turned out to be pretty exciting. But I definitely was there when, you know, Snyder showed up and did the you know, the greatest turnaround arguably of any school in NCAA probably for quite a while yet. So, I mean, it was fun to be part of that. And then, you know, we went to, gosh, started going to bowl games, went to go see them beat Wyoming down in Tempe. And that was exciting. You know, we'd just one of those things as a college student, you guys like hop in a van and you guys all take off and go down there and have a great time. And you know, that was just the start of many, many bowl games that we've been to. And so, it's pretty fun.
You have kids there now, but you also have family that went there. Where are you sitting, and how did you end up from home to K-State and back?
Well, yeah, I have one son that is graduated from K-State and is back on the farm with us now, and he's majoring in agronomy and is working here on the farm. Excuse me, with us. And so basically it's just he and I and my wife that do all the farming. And we do hire a couple of other family members from over during the summer And so we've been pretty fortunate that we can run it as a family farm as much as possible and not hire anybody outside. But then, yeah, my second son, youngest son, is a junior at K-State, and he's majoring in ag engineering and wants to design, improve farm equipment. I mean, he's spent all of his life fixing stuff and working on stuff here in the shop. And so he knows what works and what, and he's like, oh, why did they do it this way or whatever? There's gotta be a better way to do that and stuff like that. So, yeah, but, and both boys are the fourth generation to go to K-State. Because both of my grandparents, all four of my grandparents went back in the, whenever that was, the late 20s. And then both of my parents went to K-State, and then I went to K-State, happened to marry a Jayhawk. But anyway, that bloodline didn't really transfer all the way through to my boys, because they ended up back at K-State too. So
where was the home place growing up for you?
Yeah, Hutchinson, Kansas, and this is where we are talking from now, because I'm back on the family farm. We live on the family farm, and I'm actually the fifth generation here on the farm, and my son will be sixth if he so chooses, which is his intent at the moment. So, but yeah, so we've been here for, well, we have t-shirts that say family farming since 1885. And so that's when it started. And so it's a good legacy to have, and I'd like to try to keep it going as long as possible.
Well, you have two pictures behind you, one over your right shoulder and one on your left shoulder on the wall there. Are those pictures of any of the operation at home?
Yeah, that picture up there is a grain elevator that my grandfather built, which we still use. And I'm not smart enough to know how to zoom that in. But it was just a picture that we happened to catch with the sunlight, sunset just behind it. And it's really a pretty picture. And yeah, and this other one is a little bit harder to tell, but this is actually on my wife's side. Her family had a steamer thresher, and this was the thresher. Nope, that was the steamer part of it.
Yeah. So,
and it's a little bit of a glare on it, but anyway, that is on display at Minden, Nebraska right now. And so there was a painting they had of it, and we went up there and visited. And in the lower corner, there's a plaque that says her grandfather's name and where it came from and stuff like that. So we did get to go see it, which was pretty cool. But so farming run deep in both of our families. So.
Sorry to make you move your camera and reset your shot. Okay. Sorry about that. I just saw those and I'm like, well, those are interesting things. And so you have you're in an area that it can grow just about anything now. And people around you are. What are the, I want to say four big crops, but I bet you're going to tell me there's more than four main crops that you have on your farm.
So winter wheat is our primary crop. That's what Kansas is known for. The environment is such that wheat is a very, very tough crop. It'll take all kinds of abuse and still produce a crop. And so that's what we put most of those eggs go into that basket, and that's our main crop. And then for another winter crop, we also do canola, which is a little bit, it's not for the faint of heart, I guess. It's more of a high management crop, because you can do everything right. And if you hit the wrong cold snap, I mean, the stuff's pretty fickle, and it may decide not to green up in the spring, which we've had a little bit of that this year, but not from the cold snap. It's from too much dry weather. Because you can see exactly where the snow's been sitting. It's just perfect stand, looks beautiful. But you get out in the field and it's just, it's not the same situation. But, you know, it's a good crop for a rotation with wheat. It gives the wheat a break. And there's a benefit from having canola in between those. You can get a 30% yield boost in your next year's wheat crop. And so it's really a fantastic deal. And so we try to keep doing a couple of fields every year. So it's kind of like summer fallowing a field, only you most of the time will get a crop in there also out of it. So so in popularity or as far as acres go, sunflowers will be our next crop in line. And so we grow a lot of sunflowers. I'm on the Sunflower Commission here in the state of Kansas. And just a... arguably sunflowers are one of the prettiest crops that we raise. Sunflowers and canola, when they're both blooming, just gorgeous, gorgeous crops, because canola has a bright yellow flower and everybody knows what a sunflower looks like. In a field of sunflowers, you can't see this one, but I have another picture up here of sunflowers on the wall ahead of me here that was taken. And it's just a really beautiful crop, but also it's the ugliest crop when it's time to harvest, because when they're dead and ready to harvest,
it's dark.
It is. Yeah, they're ugly, ugly, ugly. And you don't think there's anything out there, and you pull the combine in there, and it's fun to harvest. It is, you kind of got to watch for combine fires, because sunflowers are an oil crop, and if you let the dust build up too much, and you can kind of get in trouble with that. So we've had some hot spots on our combines from time to time that we have to take care of. But yeah, and so then the other crops would be your corn, your soybeans. We do some alfalfa, and we also do some cotton.
So then
a lot of cover crops. So
what helps decide where you go? Is it chasing markets? Is it rotation? Is it what you and the family decide upon? Or how do you come to what goes where on each acre?
Well, to be right honest with you, we bumped our wheat acres, because at the time we were thinking, $6.50, $7 wheat's pretty good. And so we thought we're gonna bump the wheat acres. It takes a little bit fewer inputs for wheat. It's not as high management of a crop. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you know what happened with fertilizer and inputs? I mean, everything just skyrocketed, and luckily the price has not matched, but I mean, fertilizer has gone up fourfold, and the price of wheat is up to about, I think, $10.50. So it's gone up $4 in the last 6 months. But, you're still relying on Mother Nature. I mean, it's still got to rain. I don't know if you looked at the drought map lately, but we're not in a good situation. Western Kansas, I don't even know if their wheat has even come up from when they planted it last fall. Our wheat looks good right now, and we have I'd say barely adequate supply of moisture. We had an inch and a quarter to inch 30 about a week and a half ago. That really gave it a boost, but we're just kind of living rainfall to rainfall, which is what we did all year last year. So we don't really have a huge supply built up in the subsoil. So
the drought map. The drought map's the color of the sky in your grain elevator picture there. It's a lot of dark yellows and almost reds. So, yeah, when you have that drought condition in it, but let's face it, Kansas lives in the drought, it seems, more than out of it. Is it just an unfortunate fact of where the geography is for you?
Paul, I actually think I probably could be proved wrong, but it seems like if you would – overlay the drought map over Kansas for the past, let's say, 100 years, and if you correlate that with the tornado outbreaks, it just seems like that line is slowly shifting to the east. And while we used to be on the east side of that line, I feel like that line is like right on top of us, or it's moved slightly to the east of us, because all of these systems this spring so far have developed just to the western or to the eastern edge of our county, and then gone and then had good moisture going east. So I don't know if that just, when you're in a drought situation, it seems like it just keeps becoming a drought until you get something major to come through to break it, whether that's the change in the ocean patterns or whatnot. But it takes quite a bit to break out of that. Wheat has 9 lives, it seems like. And so, we probably could go until that stuff's turning blue, which it does a lot, and get a 2-inch rain, a freak 2-inch rain, and have a pretty good wheat crop. So, it's just, that's why the market doesn't ever get too excited about the drought conditions until we actually get close to harvest time. So it's one of those things that, you just kind of put your faith in God that, you're going to get some rain. And if not, boy, thankfully there's some crop insurance available. So,
yeah, the options, you don't like to rely on that. And you want to be able to grow something, because you want to be able to be in the combine and doing something and not just well, let's go chisel that under or let it stand because it's not worth even doing that.
Right. Well, I mean, the options are, either, of course, I would say, and I asked my dad this, in his years of farming and my years of farming, there's never been a total wipeout on a wheat crop. We've always harvested something. May not be very good, but we've always harvested something. And so, you know, your options are endless and like you said, where we are located, we can raise a lot of crops and we can double crop a lot of stuff. So if our wheat fails, we get a rain, we'll go stick another crop of, say, sunflowers in there or soybeans or whatever. And then we have another chance of getting another crop. So
you mentioned you're on the Sunflower Commission. Before I ask you this question, I want to just say, in fall of 20, when we were not traveling and the world seemed to be looking, I did a couple of these podcasts talking about agritourism. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that prompted me were all the pictures of people going out into sunflower fields. I was just amazed, you know, the blue skies of July and August and September, and every, you know, that was the, it's outside, it was spread out. Did you see that in your area, or was that more in, you know, fringe areas that were, of course, they were just planting the sunflowers for not quite the purposes you have as a major crop. Did that help the industry when you see all these people getting out and having those photos in sunflower fields?
You know, once a field of sunflowers starts blooming, it seems like everybody talks about it. Everybody knows where it's at. And if it's halfway close to town, everybody's in it. So, you know, I work with a local photographer, and she kind of likes to take pictures in sunflower fields. And so she gives me a gift certificate or whatever for the use of the field, which is fine as long as they're not out there picking them. But there's a local group here that they used to do a corn maze. And so they now do a sunflower maze, but they actually have like a 2K run through the sunflowers. And so they've capitalized a lot on the prettiness of the sunflowers, and they get 400 or 500 people that'll come run their 2K, you know, race in the sunflowers. And I don't know that they shut down for COVID. They shut down for rain. They got rained out one time, but they didn't. I don't think they shut down for COVID. But they're close enough to Hutchinson or to some of the surrounding towns. And actually, people will come from to do a 2K race. People come from quite a ways to do that. Between sunflowers and cotton, those are the two fields that people like to get out and take pictures in. And it really surprised me the first year we did cotton, how many people wanted to come out and take pictures in the cotton when it was blooming, or not blooming, the bowls were opening up and mm-hmm. the cotton was going and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just those, it's a novelty for people. And then when you're driving by and harvesting it, people, it was like a traffic jam. It's like people are watching the harvesting of the cotton and stuff like that. But sunflower fields are hugely popular for pictures. We do farm a field that's in the city limits of Hutchinson, and we're actually putting cotton in them this year, but I was tempted to put sunflowers in there, but I'm afraid I'd have to patrol it or stand there with my little mug, my donation cup. So, you know, here, make a donation. But, you know, I don't know if that would work or not, because I'm pretty sure it would have been just overrun with people. So,
well, here's the we'll amplify the tech thing. So if you know, you could probably do, I think what they call like a geofence or something. And anytime anybody took a photo, they get a message on their phone that gives them the facts about sunflowers or cotton. And you can just take that opportunity to do a little education as well.
And we could tie that to PayPal for a donation.
There you go. Right. That's right. So, I think we have a business plan formed right here.
To enter the field, you have to agree to donate to Pierce Farms.
All right. Sorry. So next time you go to Hutchinson and you go through the field, sorry, that's my fault. Let's go to sunflowers. Let's dive in on the current world situation, because I don't think those that go traipse around looking and getting those good photos, they think – like my kids even think, oh, the sunflowers are only good for going to the baseball stadium or the game or as a kid chewing or whatever. There is a whole nother side to this that plays out that probably weighs more than almost anything else when it comes to sunflowers, and that's the oil. What is, you mentioned how it is an oil crop. What, give me a little information. Tell me about, educate me on this sunflower.
Yep, so there are two basic types, main types of sunflowers. You got your confectionery sunflowers that are what you and I eat, you know, Spitz or
you don't have them right next to you, but I know what you're looking for.
I was looking around because usually there's a bag. Usually there's a bag sitting here. All I have is pretzels. Sorry.
Oh, and that's another good. I saw what those were. Those are good too.
Those are good, yeah. So the honey mustard flavor is just, wow. Anyway, sorry, I digress. But two kinds of sunflowers, oil and confectionery. Confectionery is what we eat. The oil flowers are what we either make into birdseed or crush for cooking oil. And so those primarily what we raise because the confectionaries require a contract with a, you know, a company like Frito-Lay or somebody like that, so that you have a place to go with them. And from what I understand, I've never raised confectionery flowers before. I'd like to try it sometime, but they're worth more money, but they yield less. And so I think maybe it's a little bit of a trade-off there, but I'd like to try it sometime anyway, but I won't do it without a contract.
Sure.
Because insects and other things have become much more important, and seed size and all those good things. But the oil type is what we raise. We've got several drop-off locations. And we, as of yet, we've raised a few for oil, but primarily ours go for bird seed. And, you know, especially during the pandemic, the birdseed market just took off. I mean, the little ladies or whoever wanted to stay home. I mean, everybody had to stay home. And they're like, man, there's so many birds around. We should be feeding these birds. And I mean, we couldn't produce enough sunflowers hardly to keep it going. You know, Lowe's and Home Depot and all those places sell, you know, birdseed like crazy. And so that was a really good thing for us. And in my past, I mean, the highest price I've ever seen for sunflowers is, and they price them by the pound. And so it's cents per pound. So 32 cents per pound was the highest I've ever sold sunflowers for. And that was 20 years ago. And then the market, because there was a huge shortage, I guess, a big drought or whatever. And I was pretty new and naive to sunflowers. I didn't really realize the whole, you know, climate of sunflowers and stuff. But yeah, and so currently, like, we sold sunflowers this last year for 31.5 cents per pound for a lot of flowers. And the price, I think, is only going to get better just because of, A, what's happening in Ukraine and Russia right now. Because Russia and Ukraine are number one and number two in sunflower seed sales worldwide. United States is down the list of ways, number 16, number 17, somewhere like that. And so they're not a big player in this. And so can the United States make up the difference? Absolutely not. We would have to plant a lot of sunflowers. To be honest with you guys, just don't, I mean, and that's part of our job on the commission is to educate people about sunflowers, you know, that it's another viable option, especially in a drought situation. You know, they don't take a lot of moisture, which is what I like about them. If you have limited irrigation, it's a good choice. To be honest, guys have tried them in the past, maybe not had a good experience with them, you know, but the varieties have changed so much that the yield potential is so much higher now. Because when you talk about yield on sunflowers, you talk about pounds per acre, and we like to shoot for 2,000 pounds per acre. We have achieved 3,500 pounds on a dry land field. That's kind of like raising. So for you guys, you know, maybe 350 bushel dry land corn. So, you know, it's really good, really good.
Yeah.
Really good yield. So that doesn't happen very often. But primarily I'd say our average yields, what we expect are like 2,500 pounds an acre. So we feel like if we can hit that, we've done really well. But yeah, so that's just, educating people about flowers is pretty important to us. And so we do some schools once in a while across the state, you know, just reminding guys that there's another crop out there. And you know, the sunflowers are primarily grown in the Dakotas. North Dakota, South Dakota, because I also, as being chair of the Sunflower Commission here in Kansas, I get a seat up at NSA, which is the National Sunflower Association, in North Dakota, or that's where we're all of our meetings are. So I went to Fargo, North Dakota in February for my first meeting.
That's the best time to visit Fargo is February. Exactly. That's why it starts with F.
Exactly.
There's another word for it too that we're not allowed to say.
I was like, can we move this meeting south somewhere? We'd be happy.
And here's the thing that I've picked up on North Dakotans and South Dakotans to the same matter. You could have an 8-inch snowfall overnight or in the morning. They're still going to have the meeting because you can't find a window sometimes. They just traipse through it. I just love that.
You know, Paul, I think that except for maybe up north, I think the rest of us are just getting soft. If they even so much as forecast 2 inches of snow down here, they call school off.
Yeah.
And then they completely miss it and they look silly, you know, because.
And then there's the days when there's no forecast. And I go to a day and I think it was late 20 here in central Iowa. We had 8 inches during the school day and we kept school in session.
That's the way it was when I was a kid too. I mean, I loved riding the school bus home when the bus driver was just having to butt drifts the whole way home. I was like, this is fun.
It was fun for you.
It was maybe yeah, not for the bus driver, but
yeah, the bus driver and your parents might have been a little nervous. I mean, I get nervous with the kids on the bus. You know, when mine goes, and you know, it's an adventure, and you know, with this national commission, I mean, let's. A lot of things have changed. I keep going back to 20 because it seems like so much, if anything, 2020 accelerated any discussion that we have. Trade issues, supply issues, grocery store, whatever it is, it just accelerated a discussion that was likely happening. So when you have something like Russia and Ukraine and this invasion, that I would guess as a commission, you had to accelerate some discussions with some people because phones are ringing about who can talk about sunflowers. And wait a minute, maybe I should plant. And that window of discussion and reflection time is gone. Am I accurate? Is that an accurate statement that it is a short amount of time that you have to talk about these things and make decisions?
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're planting your crop. I mean, now is the time to either make or have made that decision, because if you wait too much longer, you're going to be a whole nother year and the dynamics can completely change again. So I guess the biggest thing is, you know, sunflowers, the opportunities are huge there, but you know, the other crops also have increased in price too. And so there's still that competition, but sunflowers honestly have a really good return for investment on planting them. And so that's the message we have to get out. And anybody that asked me, I was like, you know, of course, and then you don't want someone to have a bad experience with sunflowers, because then, you know, that news kind of travels faster than the good things. You know what I mean? And so
I think you told me last week that sometimes you have generational issues of, well, we did this in 52 and it didn't work. Right.
Right. Right. Right. That's kind of what I was getting at. You know, I've talked to some of my neighbors and it's like, oh yeah, I tried these 30 years ago and they didn't work and I don't want to do them again. I had bad experience, you know, and then that kind of thing just sticks with you. And so I guess, you know, a lot of times I just do it by, you try to lead by example. If they see my fields out there and see that we're making it work and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously that's a microclimate type in right here in my little neighborhood. But, you know, I get calls from guys, especially after our schools, is like, is this really, you know, can we really make this work or whatever? And I was like, well, okay, there's, you know, certain things you gotta do, because there's very few weed control rescues in sunflowers, because they just, I don't want to say they're very closely related to a weed species called the common sunflower, and they're just hard to control weeds in sunflowers. And with our current resistant weed, pigweed, Palmer amaranth weeds that can get going here, your best option is to start with a clean field, keep them from coming up, mechanical cultivation possibly, but you know, there's things, you know, the crop rotation becomes pretty key. If you have it, like I said, if you have a field that's got weed issues, you maybe want to choose a different location, you know.
And it's not exactly like chemicals to fight those weeds are cheap right now.
No, and actually, honestly, the chemicals, you know, a couple of the flowers have you can run. They're not sunflowers are not a GMO product. They've been naturally selected to be resistant to either Clearfield or Beyond, or two of the chemicals that you can use on them. And they're Clearfield flowers. You can run the chemicals Beyond that you put on them. But the problem is, you may or may not get the weeds with it because they become ALS resistant. And so, you know, you take your chances, and that chemical is not exactly cheap. And so it can be a waste of money, honestly. So I've seen fields that have gotten taken over by weeds, and while they try to compete, they don't do very well. Cause you know, if they're competing for moisture and for sunlight, the sunflower is going to lose out because a weed is designed to survive at all costs. You know, that's what a weed does. It wants to multiply and produce seed and propagate, and he doesn't care who he takes down in the process. So
that's how come a weed can grow in a parking lot.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
If you need any further evidence, we'll go back to your situation with crops. How do you decide right now, this year, as we sit here in April of 2022, what you're going to plant if you've got open acres, given cotton has performed extremely well price if you'd forward contract something. Sunflowers have had a big demand. Wheat has been well. Oh, and by the way, corn and soybeans are also at ridiculous prices right now. How are you making your decisions? I'm not asking what are your decisions, because that's your own business, but what are you factoring right now?
So I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket, so to speak. I told you I did increase wheat acres a little bit because I feel pretty confident about that one. But as far as deciding between sunflowers, cotton, soybeans, and corn, they're about equally split. So the fields that I chose to go to cotton are, they could have gone to sunflowers, but there was a few more weed. Again, they weren't as clean as I would have liked to have seen. And so those fields are going to go to cotton. And they had just been beans, so I don't want to do beans on beans. And corn is a little bit risky, just in light of it takes a lot of moisture. And so I keep my corn where I have the highest proven APH as far as insurance history goes. And so that one is kind of by itself. And so, but the other fields that were going to cotton that probably would have gone to sunflowers just had a few more weed issues than what I would have liked to have seen. Plus, the one field in town that I was telling you about, I'm a little bit concerned about birds, because birds like to hang around, you know, power lines and stuff in town. And I think they would just annihilate my crop of sunflowers before I had a chance to go get it. And so we're going to raise cotton there. So I guess that's kind of, and also cotton doesn't take quite as much fertilizer as corn. Sunflowers don't take as much fertilizer as corn. Then soybeans, obviously, you could get by with just planting soybean out there with nothing. You wouldn't even have to put any starter out there if you didn't want to. We don't typically do that. But, you know, those are some of the thoughts that go through my head is, you know, first and foremost, weeds, you know, as far as putting sunflowers out. Okay, where can I put them that I'm not going to have any weed species? And because I want to do the very best job I can, and I don't want to propagate those weeds. And then it becomes almost the availability of the chemical too now, because that's this whole supply chain issue is become a bigger deal. Because if there are certain chemicals that you need for sunflowers and you can't get them, like, you know, Dual has become a short supply. The other stuff is pretty good, but Liberty doesn't really apply to sunflowers, but it does to cotton and soybeans. That one's gotten really expensive and really hard to get. And Roundup, luckily we have all our Roundup sitting here. So we're good there. But, there's, you know, and monetary issues aside, I mean, I kind of have to go by the agronomic issues of where I choose my fields. So, but there's an equal balance. But when it comes to double cropping after wheat, because we have number our crop rotation is when a field's been in wheat for a number of years, it's time to rotate it out. Mm-hmm. And we'll double crop, and usually we only go sunflowers because they're the only crop in my opinion that will really make it. they like I said, they're thrifty on water. They do such a good job of getting down to getting some nutrients that have been left over from the wheat, let's say. And so we just we do really good with doing double crop on sunflowers.
And I cut you off earlier. I think you were starting to say you do some cover crops, but the wheat stubble kind of acts a little bit like a cover crop to at least suppress some of the weeds before you put the sunflower in. Is that also a thought?
Yeah, I mean, we still have to treat our sunflowers just like we would a full season field. I mean, we still use our residuals, and that's pretty much what we rely on. We'll go through and we'll burn down with Roundup, and you can't really use 2,4-D or dicamba because of the residual wait time to be able to plant. Because if you happen to get a rainfall at the wrong time, it'll affect the moisture and stuff like that. And so there's always, that's where Liberty has been such a benefit to us, because it'll kill the weeds, yet it won't, there's no residual there. So, but yeah, I mean, we like to have as much stubble as possible to plant into, because not only does it help suppress the weeds, it helps keep the moisture in place. Sure. And as quickly. So,
all right, Cameron, as we come to a close here, I know I hit a bunch of things. What is, for those outside of your region who might be watching this, what's the best message about the sunflower situation in the world? How do you see us as a United States growers helping to the world situation, but also the world picture? How do we make sense of some of these headlines, whether it's a product that's going to be for bird seed, or if it's a product that's going to be for oil, or if it ends up just being a photo op?
Right, right. Well, like I said, sunflowers are the prettiest and the ugliest crop at their point in respective development stages. But yeah, I have a really good friend from Ukraine that I've been in close contact with, that's been keeping me updated on things going on over there. But it's really a sad situation that, and I don't know if we completely know what's going on over there. I mean, you can't hardly watch, and no offense, but you can't hardly watch mainstream media anymore and get a straight story. And so I don't know, you know, I do know that there's been a lot of destruction over there, and guys are trying to get crops planted out there in Ukraine. But I saw a map the other day that said only about half of the world is actually supporting Ukraine. The other half has been kind of indifferent, like the Africa and South America haven't really thrown their support behind Ukraine, which is kind of disturbing a little bit. But and some of those countries are the ones that raise probably more sunflowers than what we do. You know, South Africa and some of those other countries over there actually raise more sunflowers than what the United States does. Total. But you know, whether or not Russia has taken care of enough infrastructure in Ukraine to make it really difficult to get their product to the port, because Odessa is one of the ports on the sea down there, and that's one of their primary routes for getting sunflowers exported. And if they have to rebuild it before they can do anything, I mean, it's, this could be a longer situation than just, you know, watching out for landmines and holes in your field that a missile has struck or something. But, you know, again, the fact that we're benefiting from this is just a sad situation to me, that it has to be that way. So, cause you know, having such a close friend over there is difficult. While he's not exactly a farmer, he works with farmers. He's brought a bunch of Ukrainian farm groups to our farm, and I've actually been to Ukraine, at his invitation to do a presentation on our farm. And, but it will never be the same. I can never go back there now, and it'll never be the same. But, so I guess it's kind of a lot dog trailing around your question, but, you know, sunflowers have a huge potential here to get up to even 40 or 45 cents a pound, I think, depending on how long this thing drags out and whether or not how much of their crop they get planted, because, and I don't know, the Russian crop still will get planted, obviously, because they're not, you know, they're not getting missiles and bombs. But it will remain to be seen how much of their crop actually gets purchased by other countries. So hopefully, you know, and the United States does export some sunflowers, but primarily it's mostly for domestic use. And so we would really have to really ramp up our production to make any difference, you know. And
in a short amount of time. I mean, it's a really hard pivot.
Yeah. Right now, seed supplies are good. So, I mean, the seeds are out, the seed to plant is out there. So, I mean, it's a thing that it can be done. But guys, you know, it's an educational thing. Guys just sometimes just aren't thinking sunflowers. And so that's why we have to do our job. And, you know, and, you know, if people see this, they're going to say, hey, man, maybe I should try some sunflowers as well. And so.
Well, and I think I mentioned this to you last week when we talked, you know, like the oat story of last year, you know, the old adage that the grain market analysts would tell you is, you know, oats knows. Well, that's kind of out of place now because there's only certain places that grow oats well. Mm-hmm. There's only certain market and availabilities, outlets for your product. I mean, you're in an area, I think you said you had a couple of options for your sunflowers. Where I'm at, I don't think necessarily anybody does because not every, as you said, co-op takes the product sometimes. Or I shouldn't just outlet a co-op, but a buyer.
And the other thing is, I've the more I've gotten into this, I didn't realize that some counties, even in eastern Kansas, aren't even, sunflowers is not even an insurable crop because they're historically not raised there. Because when you get into higher humidities like what you have in Iowa or eastern Kansas, whatever, you have more disease issues. And so that's why if you look at this main sunflower producing map, it goes from Texas to North Dakota and up into Canada. And because that's kind of the drier high plains area. And that's where they have the most natural fit because, you know, you don't hear of sunflowers being raised in Georgia or Alabama or too much like that. And so, and there's probably a reason, you know, I've never explored that one, but I think they're a dry weather crop. And so where it rains a bunch, people aren't just going to raise sunflowers. So. Sure.
Well, and especially if they're cotton set up for cotton and that becomes more profitable or as the case has been over the last few years, corn and soybeans.
Right. Exactly. And those three crops they're all GMO crops. And so they all have the weed control issues that, you know, that sunflowers lack. And so if you're really into the non-GMO thing, sunflowers is a fantastic crop too, you know, from that perspective, you know, so we can actually say wheat so far, wheat and sunflowers are, you know, a couple of the two crops that so far still aren't GMO. So, and that's become kind of a big thing now, you know, people like to know where their food comes from. They, you know, they want to know the farmer, they want to know which farm, they want to know how he farms, and they want to know what they're eating. And so it's all important stuff. And so we keep finding out more and more information about it all the time. So.
Well, we appreciate the time you took out. I know it's getting to be the point of you got to go out and turn some wheels and get some stuff in the ground. All talking aside, right?
The planter's sitting here ready to go out here in the shop. So I'm gonna show you a picture.
Oh, you got the picture? Yeah. Can I see the picture before we're done? Oh, yeah.
What I was gonna show you. This, it's a little bit hard to see, but I should make this a backdrop to my office here. That's the picture. It kind of goes with the one over the, see the colors? Or
yeah, they are. They kind of match.
Yeah.
So. That's the thing, you know, and I was telling you before we started rolling about, I love the area, you know, the Flint Hills up there in Northeast Kansas is beautiful, but there is something about that sunset. I think we were one night in Wichita and looking, we wanted to get as far west in town because we wanted an unblocked view of that sunset because it was just, you have some incredible sunsets there in Kansas.
This particular picture was taken, you remember when all the fires were going on out in California and Oregon?
Yeah.
This picture was taken last fall and this was a double crop field of flowers that was irrigated. I don't think you can see the system out there, but these were irrigated flowers, double crop, and just the smoke in the background was causing the filtered red light to to show through. Like it was just a gorgeous, gorgeous picture. And so my wife had a couple of those made up and we've got one hanging in our house and one here in the office. So, but again, just a really, really pretty crop. So
it certainly is. All right. Cameron Pierce, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Paul.
My thanks to Cameron Pierce for the time and the insight. Those pictures are incredible, especially to imagine what they would be like there as in the sunflower seed field. It's easy for me to say. Enjoy the look around here. More changes coming into the podcast. So subscribe, like. Every Tuesday, you get a new episode. Feedback for me, market@iowapbs.org. Thank you for watching or listening. We'll talk to you next time.